John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for not, oh no, my phone's just sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Wednesday, November 30, 2011. In the news today, Israel has announced it will transfer the withheld Palestinian tax money, and the power crisis in Gaza reaches its 13th day. These stories and more are coming up, so stay tuned. The Ma'an News Agency has reported that the Israeli government will be releasing the $100 million it has withheld from the Palestinian Authority. Benjamin Netanyahu's government has been under pressure from numerous sources and has finally decided to transfer the tax revenues for October and November. The money is vital for the PA as it is used to pay the salaries for its civil servants and security forces. Without the funds, Prime Minister Salam Fayyad said last week that they would run out of money by the beginning of December. The Israeli organization, Peace Now, has reported receiving more death threats against their activists. It is believed that the latest threat came from the same person responsible for the previous warnings against the group. The man has been arrested previously for calling in a bomb threat to the Peace Now office, as well as defacing the Jerusalem branch. The latest infringement was a text message to an activist called Lee, which said, quote, "Lee, today I will kill you," end quote. The movement stated that the assailant was apprehended by the Israeli police and released three times without having any charges brought against him. A spokesperson for Peace Now had this to say, quote, "He has been arrested three times and released three times. Why? Because his dad has connections with high-up people. When will his dad realize that his son is dangerous and needs to pay the price for his actions? Will they only do something when he eventually kills someone?" End quote. The electricity crisis in the Gaza Strip has moved into its 13th day, with Israeli authorities preventing vital repairs to the major lines. The outage of the line has increased the power shortage in the coastal region by 37.3%. The Israeli authorities have not allowed the Israeli supplier or the Palestinian technical crews to have access to the line to repair it. The prevention of repairs to the damaged line coincides with threats made by Danny Ayalon, Deputy Israeli Foreign Minister, that Israel is examining the possibility of Israel pulling out of the Gaza Strip in terms of infrastructure in response to the Palestinian Reconciliation Meeting in Cairo. Finally, in the West Bank, Israeli bulldozers have destroyed farmlands near the town of Masar in the Salfit district. Resident Hani Omer said, quote, I received no notification. I was surprised when I went to my land to see bulldozers uprooting my trees. Over 100 olive trees were uprooted to make way for the annexation wall that is passing through the area. That's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Wednesday, November 30th daily roundup of the news from the occupied Palestinian territories. We hope you will join us again tomorrow. This was brought to you by Hassam Kassis and myself, Adam Carey.
Afghanistan, today, NATO is reporting the death of a soldier of unreported nationality from an IED blast in an undisclosed location in southern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, Sunday, U.S. and NATO troops killed 5 civilians. 3 women and 2 children were killed in the Zari district of Kandahar, southern Afghanistan, during a rocket attack by the International Security Assistance Force. Afghanistan, yesterday, U.S.-led forces raided a house in Sarkarad district of the Nangarhar province and killed 2 brothers. NATO said in a statement that its forces carried out the operation in collaboration with Afghan forces. They claimed the fatalities were, quote, militants, although locals have rejected the claim, reporting that the 2 brothers were civilians killed by foreign forces. Pakistan, Monday, Pakistani protesters burned an effigy of President Obama and the U.S. flag to protest a deadly U.S. airstrike that killed 24 Pakistani soldiers over the weekend. The Sunday rallies were organized by opposition and right-wing Islamist groups in major cities, where opposition to the U.S. is strongest. In Karachi, more than 700 people gathered outside the U.S. consulate. Afghanistan, today, 5 people, including 2 policemen, were killed and 17 wounded when a suicide bomber blew himself up near a police patrol in the northwestern city of Banu. Banu is close to North Waziristan, a major sanctuary for Al-Qaeda and Taliban fighters on the Afghan border. Sounds a lot to me like Iraq, a place where U.S. troops are leaving in defeat after 8 years of war. Baghdad, Iraq, Monday. Mortar round scored a direct hit on the parking area behind Parliament in the Green Zone, killing at least 2 people and wounding 7 others, including 1 lawmaker. The blast came as Iraqi lawmakers were questioning Baghdad's mayor. Mr. Barack Obama, we've had more than enough of this. It's time to pull the plug on Afghanistan, just like Iraq. 8 years of war didn't help Iraq, and continuing occupation won't help Afghanistan either. Bring all the troops home today.
While serving in Camp Arif John in Kuwait, Captain Ryan Jean was ordered to visit the Army chaplain for stating that he did not believe in God. The chaplain berated the captain, now an intelligence officer at Fort Meade, Maryland. The Christian chaplain proclaimed the U.S. military was God's army and advised Captain Jean to immediately resign his commission. 3 years later, Captain Jean is seeking the Army's recognition as a humanist lay leader, on the same level as Christian, Jewish, or Muslim lay leaders who aid chaplains in ministering to the troops. According to the Baltimore Sun, Captain Jean is one of a dozen atheists in the U.S. military seeking lay leader status. Thus far, none have been successful. Currently, the U.S. military does not consider atheists or agnostics members of an organized religion, and thus they are not eligible for lay leader status. In recent years, the U.S. military has faced numerous allegations of religious bias, especially at the U.S. Air Force Academy, where fundamentalist Christian staff members and soldiers have aggressively pursued religious converts. Less than 10,000 of the 1.4 million active duty members of the U.S. Armed Forces are self-declared atheists or agnostics. Supporters say many atheists remain hidden in the ranks, afraid to expose themselves to ridicule or bias that would hinder their careers.
When tens of thousands of Egyptians gathered in Cairo's Tahrir Square last spring, demanding the ouster of U.S.-supported dictator Hosni Mubarak, the nation's armed forces played a decisive role in forcing Mubarak to resign on February 11th. When Mubarak ended his 30-year reign in power, it fell to Egypt's Supreme Council of the Armed Forces to organize the nation's transition to democracy. Initially, the military promised a 6-month transition period, after which they would step aside and make way for civilian rule. But when the generals extended their leading role in government to 2 years, Egyptians again took to the streets last week, gathering in Tahrir Square and other cities, demanding a rapid transfer to civilian control, with some calling for a delay in the first round of parliamentary elections. Clashes between police and protesters left more than 40 dead just days before voters went to the polls on November 28th to cast ballots in the initial stage of the nation's first post-Mubarak era parliamentary election. In flaming anger in the streets, the Egyptian generals stood by their plan to impose a constitution that would give the military control over its own budget and grant the army ultimate political power, as they appointed Kamel Ghansouri, a former Mubarak premier, as Egypt's new prime minister. While refusing to immediately step down, the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces pledged instead that elections will be held for a new president by mid-2012, sooner than previously announced. Your reporter spoke with Saif Dina, Associate Professor of Sociology and International Studies at the University of Wisconsin, who explains why he believes the action of Egypt's army constitutes a counter-revolution against the popular uprising that ousted Mubarak from power earlier this year.
The Supreme Military Council in Egypt was supposed to surrender power or relinquish power to a civilian administration that should oversee the writing of the constitution or the new constitution. It was supposed to relinquish power 6 months after the fall of Mubarak, but they did not. It's been more than 10 months right now. And the assistant to the prime minister issued what is called supra-constitutional principles, supported or initiated by the Supreme Military Council, that gives the Military Council some kind of veto power over the new constitution and over the composition and the formation of the constituent assembly that would be chosen by the newly elected parliament to write the constitution. So in some sense, the Supreme Military Council is, after it took over the power of Mubarak back in February, it's trying to remain the caretaker of the country and continue to control the country. But this is not really happening as part of kind of political regrouping in Egypt after the fall of Mubarak, and different groups have different interests now. Some have interest in a new election. Some don't have interest in a current election. They want the election to be held later because they think the Muslim Brotherhood are well-financed, well-organized, and they will take over the parliament. I'm talking about most of the activists on the ground, really, who did not have the chance to organize in political parties the way the Muslim Brotherhood are. But it's part of a really political regrouping in the whole region. There is an attempt by regional powers and by global powers to abort the outcomes of the Arab revolutions in Egypt, in Tunisia, in Libya, in Yemen, in Syria, everywhere. And really the heading for discussing this issue in the Middle East by most Arab commentators is counter-revolution, that the Supreme Military Council in Egypt is a tool of regional and global counter-revolution against that attempts to abort the Arab Spring or Arab revolts, mainly by Saudi Arabia that has been financing such counter-revolution. And Saudi Arabia is known to be one of the most oppressive regimes in the world, have no interest at all in any democratic transformation, not only inside Saudi Arabia, but any part in the region, because they think that will affect the conditions in Saudi Arabia. And of course, we know that other global powers like the U.S., who supported despotic regimes for a very long time, and European countries like France, who have some interest in the region, mainly oil, like the scenario of Libya testifies, don't have any interest really, or any genuine interest in democratic, in real democratic transformation in the region.
When hundreds of thousands of people across Egypt demonstrated to remove Hosni Mubarak from power, Many people in those demonstrations viewed the army as a neutral arbiter and protector of the people of Egypt, helping to hasten the day that Hosni Mubarak left power. How has public opinion changed since the ouster of Mubarak?
Well, to begin with, there is a significant shift in the public opinion in Egypt regarding the Supreme Military Council. And they actually make a serious distinction, and that's really true, between the ordinary soldiers who are conscripts. They're the sons and daughters of the people of Egypt, and the Supreme Military Council, because it took over the office of the president. So they look at it as a committee with the power of president of the republic. Most of the people in Egypt, really, who participated, or the activists who participated in the revolution against Hosni Mubarak, are really intelligent, and they really understood from the very beginning that the Supreme Military Council was actually part of the Mubarak regime, and they still perceive it as such, and that explains much of its behavior, really. But obviously, the Military Council had no intention from the very beginning to surrender power, and that's what is bringing the current uprising against them.
There's been reports of a large turnout for voters coming out in this new parliamentary election. In the rounds of the election ahead for a new parliament, the first parliament since the fall of Hosni Mubarak, are these elections, in your view, free and fair from the reports you're getting?
You know, they're held over 2 days, and this is part of what's worrying some of the activists, that holding the elections in three parts, two days each, makes a room for some bad moves from the side of the Supreme Military Council. But that notwithstanding, you know, the elections most likely will be held and will be fair and transparent. The main issue here is, really, should it be held right now? And I think there is an issue with this, because a significant number of the forces on the ground are not really ready for it. So I won't be surprised to see the Muslim Brotherhood taking over most of the parliament, or a significant percentage of the parliament seats.
That was Saif Dinah, Associate Professor of Sociology and International Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. Find more information on the political situation in Egypt by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to wsqtradio@hushmail.com. Repeat, wsqtradio@hushmail.com.
The night of November 29th, November 30th, 1,400 cops assaulted Occupy Los Angeles. Another police raid against Occupy Philadelphia left the campsite smashed. Protesters in LA have scheduled a regrouping for the afternoon of November 30th. There is talk that Occupy Philly may relocate to a new site. At least 200 arrests were reported in Los Angeles. The police were reported to be wearing riot gear and, in some cases, biohazard suits. Given the huge size of the assault force, it appears that they were still smarting from the defeat of their prior eviction attempt Sunday night. One video from Occupy LA reports police drew a shotgun on someone attempting to enter the area, as well as striking them with a billy club.
Whoa.
Medics,
put it down right now, put it down.
It's vinegar.
Leave the area.
Leave it.
It sounds like those cops were afraid that vinegar, worn on bandanas by protesters as a defense against pepper spray, was some homemade pepper spray or maybe some battery acid about to be thrown into the faces. I've never heard of battery acid being thrown at cops during a riot or a protest, but I did see water balloons filled with pepper spray thrown at riot cops during George Bush's second inauguration. Earlier in this same video, the huge number of cops pouring through City Hall to attack Occupy LA are compared to swarming ants.
I knew it, dude. I told them the other night, I said they're gonna come out of City Hall, dude. So fucked up. Look at that shit.
They're like ants.
That's fucking nasty, dude.
Despite the violence of the police assault, Occupy LA has called upon supporters to return to City Hall tonight to, quote, come early and stay late. I can guarantee you the notorious LAPD, the police department compared to a gang by their former boss Daryl Gates, will pay for their crimes last night. Surely, Anonymous is going to hunt down home addresses, phone numbers, email addresses, maybe even bank account numbers of these criminals, just as they have now launched an offensive against the banks behind the violence. In Philadelphia, cops attacking Occupy Philly over the night of November 29th to 30th used bicycles as barricades, then trampled protesters with horses.
What did you do to the summit? I want to know. I wasn't pushing you. I wasn't hitting you.
What did you do to you? What did he do to you?
You hit
him
in the summit with your bike.
What harm did he cause to you?
Fuck you, Diaz.
Dozens of occupiers were arrested by the servants of state power and concentrated wealth. Again, protesters are refusing to concede, and there were unconfirmed reports of protesters gathering at 18th and Locust, an alternate location. It looks like Homeland Security and the U.S. Conference of Mayors are still trying to destroy Occupy, no matter what the price in blood and treasure. Occupy is one of the few political movements to strike real fear into the hearts of bankers, corporatists, and corrupt politicians in a great many years. Not since rural right-wingers organized armed militias in the mid-1990s have I seen this kind of fear of the people. In this case, we are talking craven fear, and therefore fear aggression, against an unarmed and nonviolent movement. Ruth Castro of Occupy Los Angeles read out this statement during the raid.
Communique establishing a right to occupy statement by Occupy LA, who are in camp being raided. Here it is, an appeal to all those across the world engaged in the struggle for social justice to stand for the right of the people to assemble and exercise free speech. Submitted and passed at the November 27, 2011 Occupy LA General Assembly to be released to the world immediately upon forceful displacement of Solidarity Park. We recognize and urge city officials to recognize the entrenched interest pressuring for the evacuation of Solidarity Park on behalf of local, but most certainly multinational corporations and banks, such as the Central City Association, preparations to lobby for an anti-encampment ordinance. We assert, in light of our action on November 17th, in which a private citizen on behalf of Bank of America placed 47 protesters on their private person's arrest with the help of hundreds of the LAPD, that the city, that the city is not being forthright in its reasoning for eviction and is in fact moving at the behest of the 1%.
The pressure.
Give it up. I have more. Occupy Los Angeles rejects inadmissible health, safety, or concerns as inadequate reasoning to displace our occupation, a political space for unhindered peaceful assembly. We remind you that while you speak of sustainability of our occupation, we speak of the sustainability of corruption and greed in our socioeconomic systems, including government. We do not consider the grass unsustainable in this climate without huge cost to the taxpayer to be a suitable reason to displace an encampment of people intent on exercising their right to free speech. Yeah.
Hey, Philly Police Department. Hey, LA Police Department. Just because you smash one campsite, just because you draw weapons and beat people up, doesn't mean Occupy is giving up. They're not going anywhere. Think of Occupy as the capitalism terminator.
We'll be back!
In the 10 weeks since the original Occupy Wall Street protest encampment was founded in New York City's Zuccotti Park, the movement has spread to hundreds of other outposts across the U.S. and the world. The message of activists condemning corporate greed, economic inequality, and the corrupting influence of money in politics has resonated with many Americans who are suffering with high unemployment, a record number of mortgage foreclosures, and dimming prospects for the future. Although the U.S. Constitution guarantees the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances, Occupy encampments from coast to coast have been the target of dozens of police raids and evictions ordered by local governments. Disturbingly, some police departments have employed brutal tactics better suited to confronting a terrorist threat than a group of citizens engaged in lawful and nonviolent peaceful protest. Video images of police assaults with truncheons, bloodied faces, and pepper spray being fired into protesters' eyes at point-blank range have gone viral on the internet, generating a backlash against police and increased support for the movement. News reports on Oakland Mayor Gene Kwan's admission that she'd taken part in a conference call with officials from 18 other cities to discuss how to handle the Occupy encampments, and a leak from an anonymous Justice Department source, led many to conclude that the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI had helped to coordinate local police actions suppressing Occupy activists. Your reporter spoke with Heidi Boghossian, executive director of the National Lawyers Guild, who talks about her group's legal intervention to stop Occupy evictions and the filing of a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit against the Department of Justice and other agencies to obtain information on their involvement in coordinating the nationwide crackdown on the Occupy protest encampments.
Since really 1999, when we had the World Trade Organization protests, we started to see, and it became known later as the so-called Miami model, but basically a nationally coordinated method of crowd control used by various levels of law enforcement. And one of the tactics that we observed before national special security events like the RNC, the DNC, was preemptive arrests, raiding of organizers' spaces. For example, when people were making puppets in Philadelphia at the RNC in 2000, pretextual raids saying that there was a fire code violation or a sanitation or health threat. And in case after case, when this went to the courts, it was found that these were pretextual raids. There was no violation. But it had the effect at the time of shutting down the speech in question or sort of slowing down what the protesters were trying to accomplish. And I think in examples that have come up at Occupy situations, for example, in L.A., well, the mayor allowed the encampment for something like 56 days and then cracked down. And in fact, the city council there had said they supported the tents as expressive activity. So I think that in certain circumstances, even in New York, the encampment was allowed to a certain point. It's almost as though the mayor said, look, we let you be there for a month or so, and now we're sick of it. So I would say that most of the claims of sanitation problems are things that a city or a municipality could come up with solutions for and help accommodate the free speech activity. But we're seeing them used, in our opinion, to shut down this free speech, because in many cases it's just gone on too long in the minds of the local authorities.
Is there anywhere in the Constitution where there's a time limit on freedom of speech? It seems that these mayors and any national coordination that's going on is really looking at free speech having limits of a length of time. You've been here for 2 weeks, 2 months, time's up. I don't read the Constitution regularly, but I don't think that's in there.
There's no time limit, and I think that's really kind of the beauty of this movement, is I think many people thought it would be over in a week or two. Cold weather came, and yet the protesters not only were still there, in many cases they were gathering momentum.
I've read reports, as I know many listeners have, about the involvement of federal authorities, namely the Department of Homeland Security, in coordinating some of the local police responses in evictions and raids into Occupy Wall Street encampments in cities large and small. What can you tell us about that, and what is the National Lawyers Guild and other groups doing to get to the bottom of any kind of national coordinating effort in these raids?
The National Lawyers Guild, along with the Partnership for Civil Justice based in Washington, D.C., has filed FOIA, Freedom of Information Act request, to find out if there were communications or meetings involving the Police Executive Research Forum in October and November, also the U.S. Conference of Mayors, specifically to find out if there was anything, any documents or information pertaining to federal coordination, or even to advice or consultation regarding the police response to the various Occupy protests around the country. And I should add that after 9/11, we saw the Department of Homeland Security launching a network of fusion centers in 2003. There are 72 fusion centers, the purpose of which is to force diverse agencies to work together. So I can't imagine, with a vast Occupy movement springing up so quickly, that there isn't national coordination. It just wouldn't fit into the rubric of current law enforcement practices.
If indeed there is evidence that there is federal involvement here in the crackdowns on the Occupy Wall Street encampments, what does that mean to you? And is any of what's happening around the country, can it be challenged in court? Can a judge basically say, hey, look, this is free speech, and these local police forces and the federal government just ought to back down and let these people have their say?
Well, and that's our goal, is to challenge whatever we find if it seems to be unlawful practices that infringe on people's constitutional rights. The problem is, you know, the FBI, we had guidelines for many years that limited when you can open an investigation of political activists. Those guidelines, as your listeners probably know, after the events of 9/11, have basically been chiseled away, so that spying on ordinary Americans absent criminal activity, getting their telephone records, partnering with corporations who, by the way, in many cases work with local police or have their own intelligence gathering departments. So it's, I think, in the public's interest to know to what extent the government may be partnering with corporations, private security agencies, doing surveillance on individuals, invading our privacy. The goal is to find out as much as we can so that we can find ways to challenge these overreaching practices.
That was Heidi Boghossian, Executive Director of the National Lawyers Guild. For more news, analysis, and commentary on the Occupy Wall Street movement, visit our Between the Lines special Occupy Wall Street coverage and resource page at btlonline.org.
This song goes out to all you goons at Homeland Security, the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and police organizations that are trying to attack Occupy camps all across the U.S. Rich takes it for his children and rags welfare reform. Let them eat cake. Why should we care? Bye, 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 bye. See the greed of the shop and malls as they pick your pockets clean. Fat in the bottom line, fat in your belly too. See the greed of the shop and malls as they pick your pockets clean. Fat in the bottom line, fat in your belly too. Bye, 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 bye. With pigeon for his children and rags, welfare reform, let them eat cake. Why should we care? Bye, 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 bye. See the greed of the shop and mall just to pick your pockets clean. Fat in the bottom line, fat in your belly too. 25th of November, Black Friday, Fur Free Friday, DC area animal rights activists showed up outside Burberry, Rizik Brothers, and Neiman Marcus, demanding that all of them stop selling fur garments and fur trim.
Over in the bloody fur industry! The fur industry is responsible for over 50 million deaths a year! And you have complicity in this fur industry! You have blood in your hands, blood soaking your face, and we're not back in your life, Burberry! And you need to do the right thing! You need to stop your sale of fur!
Rolling in on target number two, Rizik's. Rizik's is up there right over Wells Fargo Bank. Wells Fargo is a well-known target of the Occupy movement. They're going to call them up and ask if they'll set up a meeting to discuss getting out of the fur trade. No one ever complies at this point, but you got to go through it. You got to give them a chance. Our caller has been placed on hold. Just tell them we can do this the easy way or we can do this the hard way. And what did they say?
All right, folks, we are protesting them. They did not want to have a meeting. We called them nicely. We called you and asked for a meeting.
We tried.
Come on, Rizik.
So that means we tried the easy way. Guess we got to do this the hard way. Protesters are setting up the protest outside Neiman Marcus while an undercover team goes inside to engage shoppers. Gassing, frapping, anal electrocution. Take him to figure out what was going on.
Well, I guess we were in there for 15 minutes.
Not bad.
Yeah.
It was slow.
So we quietly confronted the people.
Nice.
There were a few. There weren't a lot of people. It's heavily attended by people. So we didn't hang out there. We walked around. And
what kind of people are heavily attended?
The fur department, because they make commission. So there's people all over the place. Hmm.
16 dead coyotes.
1 fur coat.
18 dead springs.
1 fur coat.
60 dead minks.
1 fur coat.
45 dead opossums.
1 fur coat.
20 dead otters.
1 fur coat.
42 dead red fox.
1 fur coat.
40 dead raccoons.
1 fur coat.
50 dead sables.
1 fur coat.
8 bludgeon seals.
1 fur coat.
And what sea shepherd got to think of that?
One fur
coat. We'll be back.
You heard that, Neiman Marcus. You heard that, Rizik. You heard that, Burberry. Till you stop selling fur, animal activists are going to be back in front of your stores and inside your stores again and again and again. If you're a regular listener of WSQT Radio, you know what we think of Walmart's efforts to muscle their way into D.C. There's some good news on that front. Mayor Gray told Walmart if they wanted to build anywhere in D.C., they had to build in Skyland. But it turns out that Safeway has a land covenant on Skyland forbidding a competing grocery store, and hopefully that'll make the whole deal fall apart. In the meantime, in Bozeman, Montana, some old friends have been active with Occupy Bozeman, and Occupy Bozeman took over a Walmart for one of their famous mic checks on Black Friday. Here's what they reported.
On November 25th, 2011, Black Friday, activists from Occupy Bozeman entered the local Walmart. The Northern Rockies Independent Media Network was there too. This is what we and the customers at Walmart heard before being escorted out by management under threat of arrest. Let's
bargain. Girls in sweatshops have to sew! Girls in sweatshops have to sew! For 9 to 20 cents an hour!
For 9 to 20 cents an hour!
Hours and hours of every day! Hours and hours of every day! It's slavery the Walmart way!
It's slavery the Walmart way!
Sweatshop labor isn't right!
Sweatshop labor isn't right!
How does Walton sleep at night?
How does Walton sleep at night?
He sleeps just fine, he doesn't care!
He sleeps just fine, he doesn't care!
He's a multi-billionaire!
He's a multi-billionaire!
Where do all the profits go?
Where do all the profits go?
Not to Bozeman, as you know!
Not to Bozeman, as you know!
Your money flows.
Why are Walmart places cheap?
Why are Walmart
Ted Rock, Jared Bob, DJ Munch, Chocolate City, this is movement music.
Have you heard the news?
Walmart's coming,
Georgia Avenue, uptown, ain't that something?
Something.
Small businesses, shop owners, hearts pumping, cause they know their livelihoods is about to take a thumping.
Thumping.
See, you can't compete with a superstore who's an importer of slave laborers. Craftsmanship, low price to flip, to undercut the market, hand over fist.
Walmart
is infamous for the way they behave. Low wage pay, treat the workers like slaves. Employees who try to unionize soon find themselves in unemployment lines. The way they treat women needs improving. 1.6 million sisters are suing them for being paid less than their male equivalent. On these issues and more, we can't afford to be ignorant.
Keep DC Walmart free. It won't benefit you or me. They ain't about spreading love in the community. They ain't about Chocolate City unity. Opportunists out to make a buck quick. Suck up all your resources and then they split. They try to come across as if they legit, but really their motives are counterfeit.
This is the Funkinest Journalist with your three Walmart commandments. Step one, move in and crush competition by underselling. Step two, pay workers nothing and block unionization. Step three, take all that money, put it into the Walton Family Foundation, and turn that into political influence to protect yourself and make even more.
Walmart, it's not a good fit for Chocolate City. Let me holler black at you with the skinny. Important that you clearly understand and remember, DC doesn't work with the right-wing agenda. The Walton families are big contributors to bigoted representatives and senators. Trent Lott, sinister, Strom Thurmond, similar, Confederate, state-loving George Bush ministers. Oversee your plantation mentality, results in black and brown casualties. Statehood opposition for the district has been supported by Walmart's mischief. The D.C. Voting Rights Act was defeated, assisted via Walmart PACs. And now they want to come here to see their money stack. Stay up on the facts. Chocolate City, don't relax and fight back.
Keep D.C. Walmart free. It won't benefit you or me. They ain't about spreading love in the community. They ain't about Chocolate City unity. Opportunists out to make a buck quick. Suck up all your resources and then they split. They try to come across as if they legit, but really their motives are counterfeit.
Keep DC Walmart free is an emerging activist group of DC residents stepping up to challenge the corporate big box invasion of Chocolate City. Walmart has plans to establish 4 stores in DC by 2012. Walmart's in DC will threaten small businesses, cause loss of more jobs than it will bring to the community, and lower the wage standards for all workers. To find out more and get involved, visit walmartfreedc.org.
In Chicago, hundreds of community activists marched outside the mid-October convention of bankers and future traders, chanting Tax Wall Street. Curtis Smith of National People's Action, the lead organizer of the protest, argued for a new tax on financial transactions, including trades on stocks, bonds, and derivatives, to fund human needs. The transaction tax, also known as the Tobin tax, could generate tens of billions of dollars to fund job creation, education, and environmental protection, while at the same time reducing destabilizing financial speculation. Activists in the United States and England have dubbed the tax on stock and bond transactions the Robin Hood tax. In Washington, D.C., National Nurses United, along with other unions, marched to pressure Congress to enact the Financial Transaction Tax, or FTT. An FTT bill was sponsored by Iowa Senator Tom Harkin and Oregon Congressman Peter DeFazio. In the lead-up to the recent G20 summit meeting, the European Commission endorsed enacting a transaction tax starting in 2014. The measure has strong backing from Germany's conservative Chancellor Angela Merkel and conservative French President Nicolas Sarkozy. The transaction tax was first proposed in the 1930s by economist John Maynard Keynes. According to the Center for Economic and Policy Research, a robust Tobin tax could generate $170 billion annually in new federal revenue.